Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson on a historic week, a roller coaster week, when we finally had the presidential election and then didn't have a clear result. It has been quite something. Here's where we're at as I record this on Friday. It looks increasingly likely that Joe Biden has become the next president of the United States. There's almost no path for Donald Trump. That doesn't mean Donald Trump is ready to give up anytime soon. He is trying to fight in every way that he possibly can. So we talk about what's next. We talk about a potential Biden presidency. We talk about some really big issues that happened in California, some big expensive propositions that everybody voted on. We got a great panel, some of our favorites on this show. Carla Marinucci, who runs the California Politico Playbook, one of the best sourced reporters in our entire state. Brian Goldsmith, a veteran journalist who's now a political strategist on the Democratic side, worked with Pete Buttigieg, worked with Lyft on this new Proposition 22. We talked with him, and we also talked with John Cobalt, a conservative from the John and Ken show on KFI AM 640, one of the most successful talk show hosts in the history of California. That show also available in podcast form on the iHeartRadio app. So those three join us for the full show to dig in to the big issues of the week. Enjoy. Welcome to all of you. Okay, so let's start with this premise. A president-elect Biden. Carla, what does that mean? What does that mean for the people of California?
Well, I mean, Biden has said many times, I campaigned as a Democrat, but I'm going to govern as an American president. And he has said that the presidency itself is not a partisan institution. So that message right there may give some people hope. But I think in the next 2 months, yeah, we may have to look at what Trump does to throw some roadblocks in his way. He may fire some cabinet members, sign a roster of executive orders that Biden may have to undo. He may even decide to up his travel schedule around the country and ramp up the red meat base again, Alex. I think that's an issue. I think one thing we can take hope from is that both he and Mitch McConnell have a longstanding friendship. McConnell was the only Senate Republican to go to Beau Biden's funeral. They know each other. They like each other. I think that may be a starting point as the new government forms and as America moves ahead to the next chapter.
Brian?
Well, I think we're going to see two big things. One, the war against blue states will come to an end. That may include bringing back the state and local tax deduction, stopping all of these actions that are hostile to the interests of people who live in more Democratic-leaning areas. And secondly, most importantly, on COVID, we're going to have a president who follows the science and listens to the experts rather than one who waves a white flag and pretends that it doesn't exist. We have 150,000 new COVID cases today.
John.
There's nothing Biden is going to do to stop the COVID cases. Politician can't stop a virus. It's going to run its course until we get a vaccine and people get injected with the vaccine. As far as what happens in the next couple of years, I mean, 60% of the country doesn't think Biden's going to last 4 years. Probably nothing. He might be just an inconsequential, almost accidental president like Gerald Ford was, because the Republicans are going to roadblock the progressive agenda that everybody was hyperventilating over. None of that's going to happen. There's not going to be massive tax increases on the rich. There's not going to be a new Green Deal. There's not going to be massive bailouts of states and cities that wildly mismanage their money. They're not going to pack the Supreme Court. They're not going to defund the police from a federal standpoint. None of that's going to happen now. We're just going to be moping along for 2 years and see how long Biden lasts.
What an optimistic view of the future, John. Let me ask you, John, a follow-up, though, because there are a lot of folks that voted for President Trump, right? And he actually outperformed the polling in most places in this country. And there's folks on the left that think that Donald Trump is the worst president of all time, that thinks that he's a liar and a criminal, and they cannot wrap their heads around how anybody could support him. Speak for those folks.
Now you're looking at almost 70 million votes. I checked today. That's more than Obama ever got in an election, more than Ronald Reagan, more than either George Bush, more than anybody, more than Clinton. He got 70 million votes. And all these people were told all those horrible things about Trump repeatedly. You had these absurd polls. I have a list here. 10 major polls, their final poll said Trump is losing by anywhere from 8 to 12 points. Clearly, at least 70 million people don't believe all the stuff they hear about Trump, or they don't care. And that's the reality that's not going away. In fact, the progressives may have signed up now for 8 years of Trump, because he's probably going to run again, and his campaign will start in 2 years. He'll agitate from now until 2022, then he starts a campaign, and then if he wins, he'll be around until 2028. So instead of getting it over with quickly in 4 years, now there might be 8 more years of Trump in the media every day.
And Brian, you know, for you, from the Democratic side, the president did better than expected. Democrats look like they're going to lose a lot of these competitive House seats, a lot of the most competitive Senate seats they did not win. Where do you think is some of the disconnect there on the messaging on the Democratic side?
Well, I think there's a mixed bag. On the one hand, you know, Joe Biden won 5 to 7 million more votes when all the counting is done than Donald Trump. He will have won the most votes of any presidential candidate in American history, far more than Donald Trump, a bigger victory in the popular vote than Obama's in 12 over Romney. On the other hand, you're right, there was a surprise further down the ticket. And I think there are a number of things that we can point to. Number one, Democrats should examine our relationship with voters of color, particularly Latinos. I think some of what we're saying and doing in those communities just isn't working. Number two, I think among a lot of suburban center-right white voters, our hold on them is a little more tenuous than we expected. We can't just be against Donald Trump. Number three, on the economy, I think we need to make a stronger and more assertive case about how our policies will make people's lives better. We can't go into a presidential election again, particularly under these circumstances, where the Republican candidate has a significant advantage on the economy.
And Carla, it appears that COVID also may have broken both ways. It obviously, people are frustrated with the fact that we have, you know, over 200,000 dead Americans, but there's also a lot of frustration here in California from Democrats who are angry that the lockdowns have lasted as long as they have and have hurt businesses as much as they have as well.
That's true, Alex. And of course, we just hit some record numbers in the last 2 days again on COVID. So I disagree respectfully with Don that this is not going to be something that Biden is going to tackle at all. That is, his messaging, I think, is going to be very, very important as we go forward right away. But I also think, look, both parties have to take a long and hard look at the way they have messaged and to the American people. The Republican Party, yes, there's going to be a faction, the MAGA group, that goes out and tries to make sure that red meat message is still strong and that Trump message is still strong. But the party itself has to confront the demographic changes in this country. We saw it in Arizona. We saw it in Nevada. We saw it in Georgia, some of the lost ground that they've made. And here in California, more than any other place, the Republican Party has seen the effects of that messaging and that failure to reach out. So the Democrats, on the other hand, have got to work with the centrist groups. Look, they've lost labor. They've lost a lot of those rank and file working class folks that have gone to the Republican Party. They got to figure out how to get that back. I got to say, in terms of the Biden administration, looking at how California might be affected, I think that is something we really want to watch. California has a huge talent pool. It's the home to Kamala Harris. I think many people from California are likely to get tapped into the Biden administration, and we could see California have a major footprint going forward in Joe Biden's administration. So that is something to watch as well.
Carla and John, you both have kind of assumed that the Republicans are going to have the Senate majority, and that is the most likely scenario. But there is a possibility that the Democrats win both of these runoffs in Georgia. Brian, how likely is that possibility? And if you were working on those campaigns, what would the message be for the Ossoff campaign and the Warnock campaign?
The message is, if you want to preserve pre-existing conditions protection, if you want to get economic relief under COVID, if you want to listen to Dr. Fauci instead of talk radio hosts, You need allies of President Biden and not enemies in Washington. I would embrace the nationalization of the race because it's unavoidable. And I would talk about the issues where Democrats are on the right side in Georgia and Republicans are on the wrong side.
John, your thoughts on that race?
Probably the Republicans win both. The only reason one of the races turned out with the Democratic leader is there are two strong Republican candidates. Those votes will coalesce. And I think in the Purdue race, he was, what, a tenth of a point short of a majority? It's not hard for him to push a little over 50 in a one-on-one battle. So it's probably going to go both ways. Again, everyone's missing. 70 million people like Trump, and they like his policy, and they like what he emphasized. They are not racist, sexist, xenophobic, homophobic. They're not, and they're sick of being called names and being abused. And if the Democrats go back to that, they're never going to get the power that they're looking for. People don't understand that they felt Trump was this superhero fighting back against every idiot in the media and academia and politics who is constantly calling them names and assigning them characteristics that they do not have. People were supporting Trump because they were upset with their jobs being sent overseas all the time. They were upset with high taxes. Business owners upset with the massive regulations that go on. They're upset with rampant, unchecked immigration. Everybody talks about his personality. He's got a crazy personality. But on those issues, he resonated with 70 million people, and he still will. And if the Republicans are smart, they would pick up on his issues because he's right on those issues for those 70 million.
And that may be a reason why a lot of these Republicans actually won when he maybe did not win, because they were able to focus more on the issues when they took the personality out of the equation, as you pointed out. All right. We got a lot more to talk about in terms of California issues. We had a whole lot of ballot measures, hundreds of millions of dollars spent on them. How did it go? We'll talk about that when we come back. Brian, let's start with you because you actually do some consulting work with Lyft. You helped work on this, and congratulations on it passing. What do you think is the big takeaway? It's good when you have $200 million to spend?
Well, you know, a lot of people have spent a lot of money in California politics and have lost. I mean, Meg Whitman spent about the same amount of money to lose the governor's race 10 years ago. I would say from the very beginning, what voters were interested in on this issue was not what the politicians thought, it was what the drivers thought. Mm. And the drivers have been very consistent. They want to keep their independence, the ability to drive when and where and how they choose, and add portable benefits. And so the core of this was always aligned with where we were. And that's what Proposition 22 was about from the very beginning. And in fact, the margin of victory was significantly bigger than we expected.
And Carla, AB 5, which was at the root of this, was this bill that got so much attention. And it was funded in large part by labor unions. This is a loss for the labor unions, right?
This is one of a couple of losses on the ballot for labor unions. I think that's fascinating. I think, you know, the message here was Californians got a clear picture that if you don't like the law, if you want to tinker with the law, you put millions of dollars together, you get it on the ballot. And I think many voters also just said, this stuff is very complicated. Why isn't the legislature dealing with this? Why am I voting on kidney dialysis or rent control again? And I think on this one, kidney dialysis was another one, Alex, where the labor unions really took it. I think many voters, based looking at those issues, just said no. They want the legislature to handle these issues. And in this case, the law, AB 5, was very controversial from the start. This one went down, surprisingly.
And kidney dialysis, she's referencing, is Proposition 23, which was this idea that doctors should be needed for kidney dialysis, and voters overwhelmingly rejected that. And, John, they also overly rejected affirmative action. This was Prop 16 put on the ballot. It seems on this one, the legislature was ahead of where the voters are.
Well, the voters were at this point 25 years ago,
right,
when the original proposition passed. Most people believe that the color of your skin or your ethnicity should have nothing to do with whether you get admitted into a university or get hired or get a contract with the government. I mean, I think that's basic. That's what Martin Luther King said, right? Let's not judge by the color of skin, but the content of character. And that has been completely forgotten. And now we're going back to the bad old days of deciding, well, you can have a job because you have a certain color. That's absurd. And most people know it's absurd. There's a lot of ways to decide who you want to hire, who you want to admit to college, but the color of your skin shouldn't even be on the list. I mean, that's 1960s thing.
Well, and it's interesting because I think a lot of the proponents of Proposition 16 thought the electorate now is a lot more diverse, a lot younger than it was 25 years ago, and yet we still got the same outcome here. Brian, another one that was interesting was cash bail. A lot of thinking that people would want to get rid of the cash bail system, and yet that survives. What did you read into that?
That was a surprise to me. I don't think that cash bail is a good idea, but there was a lot of money on one side of this that made the argument that somehow or other, if this were changed, it meant that we were going backwards on tackling violent crime. I think that was wrong, and I hope that this issue comes back again in the future, because it's really unfair that rich people have a different kind of justice system than poor people.
Anybody disagree with that? Do you disagree with that, John?
Yeah, I think rich and poor people ought to be forced to put up cash bail. They're suspected of likely committing a crime. You put up bail either to keep them incarcerated longer or to make sure they show up for their hearing. There's nothing wrong with that. You can change the proportions so everyone's affected equally, have higher bails for richer people. But I see no reason why you would turn it into a revolving door. We've had cases where guys commit several crimes a day. Because they're arrested, they're not put into jail, they're not given any bail requirements, and they're back out and they go steal another car. One guy was bragging about it. That's nuts. I mean, crime is way up in LA. Well, why would you create a revolving door? Just charge the proper bail, depending on the kind of criminal you have in front of you.
Let's talk as well, Carla, about Proposition 15. This really gets to the heart of the holy grail of all California propositions, which is Proposition 13, of course, which was regulations on taxes for housing way back in the day. This was about regulations for commercial real estate. Some people thought it was a slippery slope to more regulations for your own property taxes if you live at a house. What did you make of the way this all came down?
You know, Alex, I think this issue, as well as the cash bail issue, shows that California is maybe not as solidly blue as people think. There is a definite purple cast. Californians are conflicted in some things. On the issue of taxes, look, with 15, they did reject this high-profile, high-stakes proposition, which called for major commercial and industrial properties to be reassessed. But on the other hand, on local issues, when it came to local school and tax issues, for instance, in the Bay Area, 13 school districts, they checked the yes box on those. On criminal justice, let's remember, George Gascon, the progressive candidate in the DA's race in L.A., came out ahead. Angelino's backed Measure J. That was another with gave jail diversion programs, but they went against Proposition 25, the cash bail one. So I think on a couple of different measures on the ballot, Californians showed they're not as true blue as maybe they're depicted to be. That there is a conservative bent out there, that a libertarian bent that was expressed on this ballot.
And Brian, you wonder on the housing issue specifically how the pandemic may have impacted that, as a lot of people are thinking about maybe commercial real estate in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sympathetic to the idea of tax reform. But I think it's got to be coupled with spending reform so that voters can be confident that the money is going to go to the right places, to schools and communities, and not to special interests and pensions. And I don't think that the yes side on 15 was ever able to effectively answer the charge that the higher costs were just going to be passed down to small businesses and consumers. I think next time they're going to have to directly address those things a little bit better.
All right, well, up next, what could be the next biggest question in all of California politics? Who is going to be the next senator from California? Assuming, of course, that we have a Vice President Kamala Harris.
I'm curious if anybody has already started to pitch themselves as a replacement to you.
Well, you may be the only one that hasn't, unless you just did. And that is only slight exaggeration.
So I'll add Fernando Valenzuela. Yeah. We just hung out with him. He didn't mention it, which was a break for the two of you.
By the way, if you're offering, I'll take it.
so that leaves Fernando as the only guy who hasn't asked.
Let's get it. This week, Fernando Valenzuela actually asked to be the senator from California. No, I'm kidding. That was us talking last week with Governor Gavin Newsom about what will be the biggest issue in California politics for a whole lot of ambitious people who don't get this opportunity very often, the race to potentially replace Kamala Harris in the United States Senate. All of the power rests in one man, John Cobalt's favorite, the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, who now has this opportunity to make this pick. We are joined by John Cobalt from KFI, political strategist, Brian Goldsmith, and Carla Marinucci of Politico. Okay, John, let's start with you. Who do you think he's going to pick?
I have no idea. And he could probably pick any random person off the streets of San Francisco, and they would vote exactly the same way Kamala Harris would have voted. So I wonder if it even matters. They vote in lockstep largely in the Senate. There's very rarely anybody crosses party lines. And certainly here in California, you could know exactly, you pick a random progressive out of the phone book, if they still have phone books, and you'll get the same vote. That's all. It's whatever favor Newsom wants to do for somebody who's ambitious and wants a bigger political career. Whatever the payoff, whatever the exchange is between the two of them.
Yeah, I'm voting for the white pages or the yellow pages. It's been a while since we had that reference. All right, Brian, you're plugged into this world. There's a whole lot of people pitching themselves. What makes the most sense?
Well, you know, to John's point, it's not just how you vote. It's also what you do. Who can put together bipartisan coalitions? Who knows how to write legislation? Who can actually be effective on behalf of the people of this state? Personally, I'd be for Karen Bass because she's a master legislator. I think she would do an outstanding job. But if she wants to stay in the House to potentially become Speaker one day, which I am also for, I think Alex Padilla, who's probably the front runner, would be a good choice as well. And historic, the first Latino senator.
And we've talked to both Karen Bass and Alex Padilla about this, and both of them seem interested in the idea of becoming the next senator. Carla, you've actually been kind of the lead correspondent on this for Politico, broken some news on this. Where do you see this going?
I talked to Gavin Newsom this week on it. He says he doesn't wish his worst enemy to have this kind of decision because he's not going to make friends doing it. He also told me that people are offering to babysit his kids, go out for his groceries. He's getting lobbied day and night on it because it's the most consequential choice he's going to make. And as Brian said, he said, is he going to go historic? Maybe the first Latino, maybe the first LGBT senator. That would be maybe Robert Garcia, Long Beach mayor, who's really come up on the list. Or is it somebody who's a placeholder? He's got a million ways to go on it. I think Padilla is the one that's most mentioned, Karen Bass, Garcia, Javier Becerra is another one, the AG. And Barbara Lee has been mentioned by a number of folks, a progressive icon. She also came out first, Alex, in that USC Schwarzenegger poll this week, although most voters have no idea who any of these people are.
Yeah, more than 50% of voters had no idea who any of the people were, which was, I guess, a bad sign that they're clearly not watching The Issue Is. If only they did, they would know all of that. Thank you all for your insights. It's always a pleasure to talk to three of our favorites this week on a really big week. Our thanks to Carla and to John and to Brian, and our thanks to you for listening and getting through this crazy, crazy week. Hopefully we have a little more clarity next week. This could be a long fight, who knows? But in any event, we're going to get through this together. Please connect with me on social media. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on all of this. I'm at Alex Michelson. That's Alex with an E. Thanks for listening to The Issue Is. We'll see you next time.